What's up, guys? This is Anderson Moore, junior goalie for the Georgetown Hoyas, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, the 2026 season is upon us, finally. Well, sort of, because Mother Nature is playing games with us. In this episode, we'll catch up, we'll set the table for the season. We'll talk to Georgetown standout goalkeeper Anderson Moore and preview the biggest games of this weekend that at least we think they're going to play. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, Groundhog Day was this week.
Yes.
And it seems so appropriate on so many levels for the start of this lacrosse season. There's been way too much talk about the weather and scheduling and not enough talk about lacrosse.
It might be Groundhog Day this weekend with what happened last weekend with reschedules, postponements, cancellations. We are recording this on what, Wednesday night? And for the record, let's come clean. We had an episode in the can, as they say, for our debut last Friday, and 90% of what we talked about got wiped out by Mother Nature. So we decided to, as you put it, 86 the episode. We're keeping it in the vault, and it'll be part of the lost tapes, you know, years from now.
Someday. Yeah, and there is a, it'll gain mystery and intrigue over the years as it sits in that vault. So let's get right to it. The winter weather and the increasingly earlier start to the season were the storylines in the first week of the season. I was thinking, like, other sports don't deal with this. You know, like, even in baseball, like, you know, they go south and they have their spring training games. Well, on the opening day, like, yeah, it might rain or something, but they play and then they move on. It's like, it seems like lacrosse is like, and, you know, basketball and football, it, obviously indoor games, not, but like even football season, like they play, you know, it starts with the weather super hot in August and ends in freezing cold, but they still play. It doesn't like really impede them like we are seeing. What are your thoughts on the increasing earlier start to the season and some possible solutions that people have been throwing out over the last week as we've seen games get delayed, canceled, and postponed, like, you know, just or canceled, you know, canceled altogether?
I've had this conversation with many people over the last week, one of which was Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun. And what I said to Ed was the conversation I've been having with a lot of people. The movement to games for this February 1 start date has been about 3 or 4 years now. And this is the first year we've run into these wholesale problems. And it was a very unique weather pattern. It was a unique snowstorm. Differentiating circumstances. I mean, you and I both can't remember the last time we had a snowstorm like this, and then the weather stayed way below freezing for 7-8 days, which is what happened with this last snowstorm, which made just treacherous conditions and you know, just that consistent Arctic temperatures. I mean, normally we get a snowstorm like we got, and then within a day or two, it's in the, you know, high 30s, low 40s, everything melts, and we're good to go. So it was a very unique pattern. The other thing, everybody harping on this January 31 date, the difference was only one day. You know, most teams are, you know, the games are on Feb 1, but January 31 was just a day ahead of time. But with that being said, the coaches, I listened to a number of interviews last week leading up to what was supposed to be a pretty robust weekend of lacrosse. And everybody says, we need to have a deeper conversation around the start of the season. What are we doing? Yada, yada, yada. To me, that's just lip service. That, you know, you actually have to do something. And then I listened to one coach in particular say, you know, being all full of piss and vinegar, very bombastic and then saying, well, I don't want to be the only one. And it's like, well, why not? Like, it only takes one. And honestly, once Navy High Point canceled, that opened the door for everybody else to kind of say, what are we doing? We're really putting our players at risk. We're putting officials at risk. You asked me what can be done to mitigate this situation. If you leave the championships on Memorial Day weekend, you got to play midweek games throughout the course of the season. It just has to be done. And we haven't had situations where the stakes with conferences have been so high. And what I talked about with Ed was 30 years ago when we were in school, we wouldn't start practice until February 1st. First game would be first weekend of March. Well, we only played a 10 or 11 game schedule. And we did have two midweek games in there, you know, Washington College and Hofstra. During my 4 years would be those midweek games that we played. So it can be done, but we also have a flawed selection criteria in the NCAA, the RPI. So coaches feel like, especially conferences, they need to be as fresh as they can be to compete. And analytics and I guess nutrition, hydration, all that good stuff. But if you look at the college football playoff in the first 2 years, 7 out of the 8 games in the quarterfinals, those teams that had a bye lost. So there might be something said for playing more. And I know they're not the same sports, but maybe you stay sharper. Maybe you stay, quote unquote, fresher. Whereas coaches feel like if they're playing a midweek game, especially when you hit the months of March and April, April in particular, because that's conference play, you're running into different, you know, difficult scenarios. And, you know, I did the Robert Morris Hopkins game on television with Quint Kesenick this past Monday. And we even said on the air, like, these games this weekend that were canceled, postponed, and we have ones coming up, they're big games. They're impactful games that a win on February 1, you could cash that in May for NCAA selection. And you're not going to remember that it's played in 15-degree weather, or you're going to remember the final score. You know, you're going to remember Loyola this, Georgetown that, Maryland this, Richmond that. You know, you're gonna remember those things. So, I don't know if I answered your question because I have a lot of thoughts around it. But that's my, you know, if you want to keep the championships on Memorial Day, that's the way you do it. I know Paul Carcaterra floated an idea out there of playing out west and like Ford Field in Detroit, and the commenters were quick to say, you know, that's easy in theory. But in reality, that's a lot of money. My solution might be, instead of taking a spring break, maybe you do it early in the season. You go down to Florida and play 2-3 games over the course of 5-6 days. I know that's a lot, but I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. And, you know, we'll see if last weekend and this weekend we've got, you know, scheduled Jenga going on again. Will that prompt these deeper conversations that coaches allude to?
Yeah. And really the bottom line is we were hit with this incredible storm that was a backbreaker in the Mid-Atlantic region. I mean, a good amount of snow followed by a lot of sleet and ice on top of that, just to compact it to make it almost impossible to remove and get out of there. And then these, as you said, extended cold snap where we just don't usually get that. So in a lot of ways, like I was saying, like I would wish the story was about lacrosse and who's playing well and the new stars of the game and what teams are hopeful for to make it to championship weekend. But it's really been a conversation about the weather and the season starting. But we also talked about Groundhog Day. And the second, like the classic Bill Murray movie, here we are recording our first podcast of the year, I think.
Groundhog Day.
Again?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Groundhog Day.
Sure.
And even in this week, we've already seen, as you mentioned, many games move from like Saturday to Friday night before another winter storm is supposed to hit around here. And the conditions are supposed to be a little bit better, or they're moving indoors. But we'll get to it. Again, this is the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. We are the preview show of Inside Lacrosse. We come to you, we drop every Friday with a new episode, and we preview the most important, the marquee games. But we also try to bring in some different voices through the sport. Dix, this is our ninth season of doing this together.
Hard to believe.
That's incredible.
And I'd like to say, 9 years, wow, like, but last week when you told me, I said, wow, 9 years? I had no idea. So I'll say again, wow, 9 years? Holy magic.
Dix, we're pretending like this is our first podcast of the season.
My bad. Hey, yeah, listen.
No, but really,
I was thinking, right? Longest running podcast inside for us?
Well, for sure, of like the same two people doing it, right? Over the best, longest team doing this together. Yeah. And I got to think that I can't really think. There's some guys, you know, like I think Quinn's been doing a podcast and Paul Kark too. But like they haven't been doing it consistently like a team like us. So we're the longest running. I don't know. I don't who keeps those records? Where's the official podcasting record book? I'd like to see who else is in there.
It's got to be our boss, Terry Foy. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, but he has, like, I used to do it with Terry, and Terry's had multiple partners. So, yes, he's been doing it probably the longest consistently every year.
I think he's had to change his partners. Multiple partners.
He has had multiple partners.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just to set up this season, you know, we're back and we're better than ever. We're really excited. We always want to thank our incredible presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Thanks for all you do for us. But we're always trying to improve the product. So this year we plan to add a few new features we can work in through the course of the season. For instance, we love bringing you the different voices of the sport. You and I particularly love interviewing college players because they're at ground level of the sport, and they're interesting and they have interesting things to say. And we love talking to them. We'll continue to do that, and we'll start this week with that. But we also like having conversations with other people who are involved in the sport in different ways, people who have personalities in the sport, and we'll try to bring you some of those in addition to our player guests. And to steal a great thing from like College Football Game Day on ESPN, we might even try to work in some guest pickers from time to time, or they might sit in for the give and go sessions as we've done in the past. But I'm really excited about the season, Dix. How about you?
Everything you said has me excited. I'm glad that we're back. Have a good time doing this, spending time with you, spending time with players, talking about the upcoming games. Like I said, I got my first TV game under my belt. I'm back with ESPN. I'm back with Big Ten Network. Good schedules on both networks this year. I think that, and I'm excited to welcome some new voices in to kind of help us get through the picks and the previews and what are the best ways for people if they're interested. So I know a couple years ago we talked about having a guest whip, and like one person asked the call, it was Spencer Norcross, who teaches, and he said, what if I had my students come on? And we were like, yeah, that'd be great. And then it just never came to fruition. But how can people get in touch with us to express interest in joining us for the preview section? Now, I will say this, disclaimer, as part of the new technology, new software that we're using, we're going to have like video component. You know, at least when you preview us on Instagram or something like that, Matt Kinnear, a buddy at Inside the Cross, is going to help us out in that department as well as Terry. But if you're like an anonymous, you know, poster somewhere, are you going to have the gargled voice? Are you going to have the block over your face? If you want to be part of the show and really kind of stretch your legs and let us know everything that you know, are you going to be willing to forego your identity? Do we need to take security precautions with those people?
Yeah, you're gonna have to like really come on and join us. So how can you get a hold of us? You know, you can always reach us at our Gmail account, which is dflyanddixie@gmail.com, dflyanddixie. @gmail.com, or you can get us on social media on Instagram, or I still call it Twitter at Dfly and Dixie. You can find us there. All right, Dix, we have some week of games. You know, obviously the Ivy League hasn't played yet, and they have a lot of top 10 teams, top 20 teams. But we've had a set the scene for our listeners who have been shoveling and battling cold and are excited for the Super Bowl and haven't really tuned into lacrosse maybe a whole lot this year. Set to see, like, give me a national picture. Obviously, the IL top 20 has Maryland, Princeton, and Syracuse really at the top. And some people think that those teams might be in a sort of a tier by themselves. But give our listeners like a national table setting for the 2026 season.
I think that this might be the most wide open race for a national championship in about a decade, when you consider the fact that most of the notable stars are more on the defensive end than on the offensive end. And what do I mean by that? When you have players coming back like Will Stollard at Maryland, Sean Light, Notre Dame, Aiden McGuire at Duke, we're talking about defense more than we're talking about offense. Sure, we have some great offensive players that are back. We saw Matt Collison go off on this past Monday against Robert Morris, Max Sloat from Duke, Ben Johnston at Duke, Owen Duffy, North Carolina. A big, kind of real controversial lightning rod kind of thing. Joey Spallina is within striking distance of Mikey Powell's all-time points record at Syracuse. Man has a lot of the Orange faithful up in arms.
Correct. For a variety of reasons. Spallina's a known commodity on the offensive end. Evan Plunkett was quiet against UMass, and we'll get into that later at Army, but, he's terrific. So, I think it's wide open. Two, you have a lot of stars on the defensive side of the field. Three, no major rule changes this year. Replay stays the same, face-off staying the same. So the product's in a good place.
10-man ride. Big time trend. We saw it in the first week. A lot of 10 man, and where it used to be just kind of reside in the Patriot League, with schools like Colgate, Lafayette, to kind of junk things up. Notre Dame would pull it out almost like a full court press. We're seeing Duke going into a 10 man. So those are some of the things to kind of set the table as we begin the road to Charlottesville. And I'm excited for that.
It just feels weird not to say road to Philadelphia, road to Foxborough, whatever the case may be.
First time it's been going to be on a college campus in a long, long time since, I want to say, well, if you count Rensselaer.
Rutgers?
Well, yeah. So 02 was Rutgers, and then 03 was the first time it went to an NFL stadium. It was at now M&T Bank Stadium, where the Baltimore Ravens play. But I guess technically you could call Rensselaer Field, which was hosted by Fairfield University, yeah. But that's not a college campus, if you will, but that's the closest thing you get to it. So I guess technically, Rutgers is the last college campus to host.
Yeah. And explain that. It's because of the World Cup that Charlottesville, UVA is the host. Yeah. So yeah, it was supposed to be
Foxborough.
Yeah. Supposed to be until that, and it got moved to Charlottesville, stepped up and said, we'll host it because of the World Cup games. All right. Road to Charlottesville, and it starts on our show right now. So we're going to get ahead and look into the game previews. There's five marquee games this week. But first, I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Okay, on to the game previews. Dix, I thought the games last week, I thought it was really an incredible schedule of games for the opening week of the season. This week's okay, but it feels like, if as an appetizer, because next week's really good. Next week is really good. This feels like an appetizer like bruschetta and not like crab dip or like chicken wings. So it's like an okay average appetizer. Games start on Friday. Again, this could all change. There could be some more changes, but I think the games are going to happen. I don't think we'll see a lot of postponements or cancellations. But on Friday night, Utah is playing at Duke. Duke's ranked number 11. This game's at 5 p.m. This is the scheduled game. Duke's a 5.5 goal favorite in the third all-time meeting between these two schools. Duke's won both of the prior matchups, including a 19-17 win in Durham last year. Dix, both these teams we've already seen each of these teams play this year. What are you expecting in this game this Friday night?
Utah is a team that opened up 2025 with a big win over Ohio State,
and then proceeded to lose seven in a row. They got off to a great start last weekend, beating Delaware 16-9, really using a second half after a slow start that they ran Delaware off the field. Ryan Steins is their headliner. Terrific attackman. He's played all 4 years out west. And Luke McNamara had five goals. They faced off over 61% against Delaware and just really played a very fast style of lacrosse. Then you look at the Duke Blue Devils. They bested Bellarmine 23-8. And Max Sloat, 6 points on the day. Ben Johnston scored a number of goals. So they faced off around 67%. So face-offs will be critical in this game. That 19-7 game actually was in the 2024 first round of the NCAA tournament. I just remember because I called the game, and Duke was superior in every way. That was Brennan O'Neill's senior year. And they don't have, they have, but they don't have those marquee guys on the offensive end outside of Ben Johnston. But I mean, Sloat's a very capable player. I mean, you look at their defense, you know, Bard and Johnson, and we already mentioned Aiden McGuire. So will Utah be able to replicate and get up and down the field against Duke with regard to the tempo that they want to play? This game, I believe, is 5 o'clock on Friday. And that game is on the ESPN Network's Paul Carcaterra, Anish Schroff doing the play-by-play. So, you know, definitely make sure you can tune into some happy hour lacrosse on Friday.
Yeah, and expect a lot of goals. This game has the highest goal total, you know, 26 and
what
a half.
What is it? Okay, that's the...
As the over-under, it's 26 and a half. So it should be up and down. It should be an up and down game. I think on Saturday, there's a lot of great games, one of which features the number one ranked preseason team, the Maryland Terrapins. They will host the Loyola Greyhounds, another team that is should be much improved from last season. This game was scheduled for noon, but it's now going to be played at 2:30, and it's been moved inside the Jones Hill House, which used to be the old Coalfield House. It's limited to family, friends, and fans who already had tickets. So if you are looking for tickets for this game in a unique setting, you may have already missed the boat. This is a great in-state rivalry. Terps have dominated the series 23-4 all time. The last Hounds win was in 2023, though. What are your thoughts, Dix?
This is both their Loyola and Maryland had their games postponed, canceled last weekend. Loyola was to play Georgetown, and then Maryland was to play Richmond. And I know a lot of Maryland folks were like, why don't we just come up to College Park and play the game inside. That was Richmond's home game. And I'm pretty confident that was on the table. And Richmond said, no, we're not doing that. This is our home game. So the game didn't take place. But they both did have scrimmages 2 weeks ago. Loyola against the aforementioned Richmond Ball Club. Maryland against Georgetown. And reports from that Maryland-Georgetown game was that the Hoyas handled them in this indoor facility in College Park. But it's a scrimmage, and Maryland's going to figure it out. I'm interested to see how their transfers mesh. Leo Johnson, Chris Lyons. I have Leo Johnson as the quarterback of that offense. I think he is an ex-attackman, a guy that can run the show. A lot of people are saying they think Spanos will be that guy, but I think Spanos is more dangerous off the wing from up top, more so than he is from behind. He's effective behind, but I think Johnson's going to be that guy. And the Lions run midfield.
I think people are interested to see what the first two lines look like. Braden Irksa, will he be on the offensive? I'm sorry, in the midfield or on the attack? And then you look over at Loyola, and that is a program that has gotten an injection of energy with now Justin Ward running the offense. National champion in 2012. Done a magnificent job at Army the last 2 years. I saw Loyola play in the fall. Offensively, they look much different, a lot more energy. So, and Loyola, they've got a really nice goaltender in Max Watkinson. The Greyhounds were 3-11 last year. You know, really just not a great season. But I thought Watkinson was really, really good and didn't get any postseason honors because that doesn't happen when you go 3-11. So I'm curious to see
how Loyola and Maryland, how they face off with each other. Both return face-off personnel, and that's been an area of concern for Loyola over the last couple of years. And this is, it always takes a minute for a visiting team when you come indoors to another team's facility to get your feet underneath of you and get used to, you know, the sight lines and the environment, the acoustics. There are no seats in this facility, I've been told. I've never been there, but it is a standing room kind of thing. I don't know how loud it gets, so it should be a fun opener for both these teams on Saturday.
Yeah, fans can catch it on Big Ten Plus Network, and the Terps are 6.5 goal favorite in this one. So it will be great to see both these teams in action for the first time. All right, Dix, our next game. This is a game that's been moved. It's going to be at 1 o'clock on Saturday, also moved inside. It's number 12 Army against at number 18 Rutgers in a top 20 matchup. Again, this is now going to be at 1 o'clock on Saturday, moved from 5. And it's will be available on Big Ten Plus Network. Army is a 2.5 goal favorite on the road in this series that has a long and deep history.
Army, nice win over UMass this past weekend inside at West Point, a game played at 11 a.m. Biggest takeaway for me in that one was Evan Plunkett. I believe he had one assist, 1 point, but his younger brother Hill, 5-2.
Yeah.
You know, Army, they lose their offensive coordinator in Justin Ward, but they still are very potent, very talented. They're a team that has been disappointing the last couple of years, just insofar as not being able to win that Patriot League and take the automatic qualifier, not able to earn an at-large bid. You know, everyone says basically that they were edged out by Harvard on that selection Sunday. They're taking on a Rutgers team that beat Jacksonville in overtime a week ago. I thought they were a one-man gang offensively. I thought Colin Cardilla, the ball was in his stick a lot. And I think that Rutgers has, I don't like to throw the word around, but if you, you know, they have three elite-like players, in Cardilla on attack. He could play midfield as well. Their short stick D-Mitty, Joe Youngerkiss, and then their goalie, Carden Stoller. But I worry about their depth past those guys. And, Cardilla, he had the ball in his stick a lot against Jacksonville, and they were able to get out of there with a win. I don't know if that's going to jive against stiffer competition. No disrespect to the Dolphins. They played a great game, a great effort, and had every opportunity to win that game. But as the season wears on, and I know Colin Kelly scored a game winner in overtime, but that's after Cardilla, you know, couldn't make something happen. That's my concern for Rutgers. But this is always a great barometer to see how each team season is going to go, whoever wins this game. And I don't think this weekend will be anything less.
Yeah, it should be a great game. I'm excited to see this goalie matchup of Sean Byrne versus our guy, Carden Stoller. Again, this is going to be at 1 o'clock, and you can catch it on Big Ten Plus.
You want to talk about a team losing elite players.
They lose AJ Pilot defensively. They lose Jackson Eicher offensively. Then they lose their faceoff man, Will Coletti. And they're still preseason, top 12 Army. It's still a very dangerous team and a tough out. So they've adjusted to life after. Oh, and on top of that, they lose their offensive coordinator. So
probably the biggest game of the week was going to be the Georgetown Hopkins game. Number 15 Hopkins, 1-0, coming off a big 17-12 win over Robert Morris earlier this week, taking on number 5 ranked Georgetown in DC. Schedule update: that game has been postponed for now, hopefully rescheduled. It will be tough to put this on the schedule, but we had arranged an interview with Georgetown's outstanding goalkeeper, Anderson Moore. We're going to run that interview because it's fantastic, and then we'll get back to the game previews. But here's our interview with Anderson. Please welcome into the show Georgetown star, junior goalkeeper, and 2025 Big East Goalkeeper of the Year, Anderson Moore. Anderson, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
We're excited to have you, and we've got a lot of ground to cover, and obviously we want to get into your background, how you got into lacrosse, but for the second week in a row, Georgetown will not be taking the field. A week ago, game against Loyola was postponed, and we just learned earlier today that your game against Johns Hopkins this coming weekend has also been postponed. What's the mood for the lacrosse team? The last time you were able to compete was against Maryland in a scrimmage a couple weeks ago. Your first two games are not happening. Obviously disappointed, but what's the mindset? And when you hear those words, you know, hey, we're not playing this weekend, what goes through the team's mind?
Yeah, I mean, I was literally just like walking to film this morning. We're about to do like our scout and all that stuff, and I get a text from Coach Warren. It's like, hey, like our game's been postponed, and it's just like all the prep we did for this week and all that stuff. Not that it goes out the window, but it's like, man, like I really wanted to play. It's really not that cold. Like I would do anything to just like get out there and compete against someone that's not wearing navy and gray. So I would definitely say like everyone's pretty bummed, but it's also like we just want to play someone that's not each other, and like really excited to do that whenever that is, whenever that can happen. So that's kind of the general mood of our team.
I've heard that from other players, from coaches, that it's not that cold, but it is. Is it the adrenaline? Is it the excitement? Is it just you want to play? Because obviously the conversation has re-emerged with we start the season way too early. As a player, what is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think practice can be kind of different than games because you get to wear full sweats in practice. And so that can kind of, I wear full sweats regardless, but like, I think that kind of like tones down like how cold maybe it seems. Whereas a game, it's like you have to wear your jersey. You can wear like tights, but it's like no one's playing in sweats. So I think that kind of has to factor into it. It's also just like, you want to play that first game. You want to see where you stand with someone in like a first game. And so I think that's just like, get me on the field. I don't care how cold it is. I don't care who it is. Like, let's just butt heads and see what happens. And then personally for me, coming from Alabama, it's not that cold. So like by this time, like I would have already played probably like three games in high school, which is kind of ridiculous. I remember my freshman year, it was COVID. And by the time COVID had hit, we'd already played like nine games. Like it was kind of absurd. So I'm used to playing this early. This is kind of how I've been progressed. I know like a lot of my teammates are from like Boston or whatever. They don't start playing until like April. So, but for me, this is like the time of year that you start, and it normally goes until however long. So I'm definitely just want to get out there and play.
I don't mind the whole sweatpant thing if a guy wants to wear sweatpants. I mean, there's some schools that won't let their kids wear parkas on the sideline when it's this kind of weather. The thing I do oppose is what Dan does, and he puts the shorts over the sweatpants.
Oof.
That's a guy you're taking to the rack right away. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
what
that is definitely banned at our program. There's none of that allowed. Yeah, that's like I don't even think. We were talking about last week before we could even play, like what attire looks like. Cause in my time, it was like before we played Loyola, we knew it was going to be cold. We didn't really know if we were going to play, but it was like they weren't even going to let you wear like tights under your shorts. Like if you wear shorts, you're wearing shorts. You could wear like everything else. But like our coaching staff was like, none of that. Like they don't like the look of that. So I get to wear sweatpants. So I'm fine. But like everyone else, you can stay cold. So I felt bad for the guys on the sideline or even like any middies or attackmen that were playing. So
wait a second. Was Coach Warren going to wear insulated boots or was he going to wear another pair of Jordans that, you know, it was dozens and dozens and dozens of pairs of Jordans?
That is actually a great question. I feel like he has to wear Jordans, but to practice, like, he has to wear, like, even when it's not that cold, he's layered up. Like, he has to wear, like, a lot of layers. That's actually a good question. I would say Jordans. Like, he has to wear Jordans on game day. But when it's that cold, like, I wouldn't expect to see anything other than that. Like, he'll be wearing like three pairs of pants and like two jackets and two undersleeves.
Got to layer up. Yeah. Hey, you mentioned your Alabama, right? So you were the number eight prospect, Rick, by Inside Lacrosse in your high school class, but you really had a different path, like coming from Birmingham, playing at Briarwood Christian. What was your high school lacrosse experience like, playing on like your varsity team versus, you know, your club team for Thunder?
Yeah, I think varsity and like high school, it was definitely very interesting. Especially my first 2 years, we were like, even for like the state of Alabama, we were not very good at all. So I just saw like a lot of shots, and that's just like, if I didn't play good, we didn't win. And that's like how it was. So I think you kind of wear the weight of whatever the game, and it kind of put on you, which I think helped, especially like going into summer ball, which I looked forward to a lot of the times, because it's like, this is a chance where I can be really competitive. I can play a competitive team. I can win, which is nice. Didn't do a lot of that my first 2 years of high school. So it made me enjoy club ball so much more, because I know like some of the guys that I played with are like new from high school. They were like, oh, I can't wait to like not be playing club ball. Like, this is sucks. I've been playing for like however long. But for me, I was like, this is my chance to actually show people how good I am. Like, I just like get out there and play. So I think it was so rewarding for that measure. And I put like maybe a lot of stock into it and had a lot more fun with it, because I appreciate it more, because I know how bad lacrosse can be. But when you get out there and you get to like actually play, it's so much more fun. And that's something like I kind of struggle with, especially like after being recruited and committing to Georgetown, was just like having fun in like, especially like high school ball. 'Cause I kind of felt the expectation of like, oh, you're the only kid in the state that's like committed to go anywhere. Like, you have to make every save. And like at times high school ball became really unenjoyable, but I think I overall really enjoyed it, 'cause it had its own unique struggles. It wasn't so much like a struggle of like, you're playing someone that's like really, really good. Although there were like talented players in our state. No, I won't like say that there's zero talent here. I think there is. But it was more so like, how can I have fun when you're not playing in such competitive competition, or you're surrounded by kids where it's like your goal is to like help them get better and you're kind of taking a back seat on all that stuff. So it was hard, but for different reasons than maybe MIAA lacrosse is hard. So
let's take it back a little further. Alabama is a state known for football. How do you pick up a lacrosse stick? And then how do you make the decision, this is what I want to play at the highest level?
Yeah, so I originally played because my older brothers played, but they played because we had a neighbor that was up the street that like started playing lacrosse somehow. And he would like come down to our backyard and like we would like throw around. But we were only really familiar with the sport because my dad is originally from Northern Virginia, like Arlington area. And he never played, but he owned like these two pairs of or this pair of ancient lacrosse sticks. I think it's like an STX. Oh my gosh. It's
Sam or a Barney.
Yeah. One of those. And they're like,
yeah, what like, I played with. Yes. Those ancient relics.
Yes. Those.
Great.
No, but we had those lying around. And sometimes like my brothers would pull them out and like whack each other with them or something. And so like, growing up, I can like picture in my mind that like I'd been around lacrosse, and my oldest brother started playing in sixth grade. So I was probably like five at the time when I first picked up a lacrosse stick, but I didn't start playing until like second grade. But like, I think it was just kind of up and coming in my area at least. And then my oldest brother started playing, and then my entire family started playing. And I guess the rest is history.
What led you to the Thunder Club that's based in Atlanta, being from Alabama? How did you get linked up with Thunder?
Yeah, so if you remember Jack Jasinski from Ohio State.
The Alabama Shake.
Yes, yes. Phenomenal player. His dad started Jim Jasinski. Great guy. He's insane. I love him to death. He started a club program called Lab with the Lacrosse Academy of Birmingham. And so we would play that as kids. And then I guess he had connections because of Jack, and he wanted kids from Alabama to go play in Georgia and help them get recruited. So when I was like in fourth or fifth grade, he wanted us to go try out for 3D Georgia because he knew, I guess, some of the guys. So he sent a bunch of his kids over there. I made that team. I played with them for probably like 5 years. I went to like the World Series of Youth Lacrosse with them. I did all that stuff. But after a while, for whatever reason, like my 3D Georgia team was not playing so well. And I was thinking to myself, like, okay, we're not going to as good as tournaments. And one day, I guess we played during COVID. It was like Thunder had a play day or something. And we played against Thunder. And my dad, who grew up, was like a huge Maryland fan. And he recognized Mac Pons, who's like one of the coaches there. And he started talking to him about Maryland lacrosse. Mac asked me to try out for them. I went, and then I played with them for like the next 3 years or whatever. I kind of had started in Atlanta playing there with 3D Georgia. Had a really good experience. Love all those kids. But I think for me, the best was to go to Thunder. And I had a really good time with them, and we're really competitive. So
Anderson, you were the 2024 Rookie of the Year in the Big East, the Goalie of the Year in 2025. You started every game your first 2 years. What led you to Georgetown? What brought you to D.C. from Alabama? What was it about the Hoyas and Coach Warren that you love so much?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I'm speaking like my sophomore year, I think the first time I ever saw Georgetown play on TV was against Denver. It was 2021, and they were at home, and they beat them in overtime. Declan McDermott hit like – it was like the slowest game of all time. And Declan McDermott hit like a game winner, whatever. And I saw that, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. So that was like the first time I ever watched Georgetown or whatever. And then I guess my recruiting summer, whatever, we were around Georgetown in the D.C. area, and I had a family friend that took us to Georgetown. And I was like, wow, this is like the prettiest campus of all time. And I loved it. And then just like being able to get recruited by them, I fell in love with the coaching staff and the culture and what they're really trying to build. I felt appealed to me because I think a lot of what our program's trying to do is like, we haven't been back to the Final Four in however long. We like, I guess when I was getting recruited, they just won their third Big East title in a row. But that really appealed to me was just like the edge that that team played with, and how I think the coaching staff emulated that and all those kind of things, I think spoke to me specifically. And then I just like love the culture in the team and the guys I got to meet, and I've loved it ever since. So
Anderson, high expectations for the Hoyas team this year. You talked about a team goal of getting back to the Final Four. It's been a long time. What about this team makes you so excited and gives you guys great confidence and hope that you guys can have the kind of season that you're hoping for?
Yeah, I think it really starts top down with our seniors. I think they've done an excellent job with just like making everything black and white and making sure that like this is the expectation, this is how we're going to get there, this is the process. They've done a really excellent job with that. And I think obviously we're pretty talented in a few areas, but I think it's the guys in the middle of the field and like our D-mid crew, our rope unit has done a phenomenal job. We've moved a lot of people around and they've been willing and grown a lot. So I think that is just like how much buy-in I think we have from guys that maybe you like – you didn't expect them to like get in there and then they get asked to move and they do it willingly. And maybe there's some names that you haven't heard, but that's kind of exciting for us. And I just think this team is tough. Like I really love just playing. I mean, we haven't gotten to play an actual game yet, but even so far, like I just love being able to practice this team. And I think we care about each other and want to work hard and outwork the other team. So I think this is probably, up to this point, this is probably the most fun I've had with a group, and I feel like we're close enough and have the right pieces. So it's just about scoring one more goal than the other team.
You guys are talented, you're tough, and you may have the biggest X factor in the country in Ted Moon, your face-off coach. What does Coach Moon bring to the table?
Coach Moon brings a love for the face-off X like I've never seen before. It's absurd. He could talk about it forever. So he was actually, this is another funny Ted Moon story. He was the coach for, he was the faceoff coach for like Team Mexico and Korea. And we were both there, obviously. And he's like,
he's got dual citizenship, by the way.
Yes, he does. He does. Oh my gosh. He told me everything to do in Korea. But anyways, he's like, we have to go eat lunch together. And I sat down and we got like Korean barbecue or something. I forget. And he just talked about the face off for like literally an hour and a half. It was the most, I loved it. Cause I just love hearing someone that's passionate about something. He just loves it so much. And he's just got like, I think he's just such a good guy. And I appreciate what he does for our program. I don't think I realized like how complex the face off position was until I was like, we even had like wing film today with like our entire team. And he's just like going through all the different like call outs or like what they're trying to do. And I was like, I didn't know this. I thought you just clamp the ball and you scoop it. And he's got all the different angles to it. So that's Coach Moon for you.
Hey, Anderson, you talked about being in South Korea for the World Championship. So you were the goalie on the 2025 U20 team. Tell me about that experience. Like what was it like? Representing the United States, tryouts, the training camps, and then your time in South Korea. Like, what can you bring from that experience to this year's team?
Yeah, I think I'll just speak to the experience first. I thought like the tryouts and everything, it was honestly, it was so long and it was grueling. And it was like, I don't know, like maybe like you'd have one training camp and you play really well. Another one, it was like, oh, I don't know, maybe I left some stuff on the table. And so like, that was kind of grueling and kind of made you anxious about like if you made the team. But eventually having the honor to represent the United States was one of the coolest things I've ever been able to do. And especially just going to Korea, I've never been out of the country before. So it was super unique and like I would never end up at a place like Jeju. Another left like thinking about playing lacrosse there. So super unique. And then I think speaking to that team, I think I had such a blast with those guys and maybe guys I played with or played against in club, but maybe didn't know as well. And just getting so close with them. I mean, you're spending like 3 weeks in a hotel in Korea together. Like what else is there to do than just like hang out? So that was phenomenal. And then I think just speaking to what that taught me and how that brings into this year, I think obviously that USA team was immensely talented, but we obviously came up short, winning silver. And that was just such a blow because it was like, man, I feel like there was about a million plays that we just left out there on the field. And at times I felt like maybe you're playing like in England or someone, or like you maybe just get a little bit complacent, because you're like, oh, I know I'm going to win this game. And we weren't as perhaps detail oriented as we needed to be, or like didn't tighten up all the little areas when we maybe could. And I think seeing that and then seeing our program this year, I think that's something that I just like kind of focus on a little bit more, is like, okay, I could see where we made mistakes in Korea, and just not allowing that to happen with our team this year, and just being vocal and being like, hey, this flies, this doesn't, hey, I need more out of you here. And even with myself, just like being as focused as I can possibly be and coming out of there is like, I don't want to come out of this season and have any regrets. Like I want to share as much with my teammates and leave everything I can out on that field when it's all said and done, because I feel like I've played a lot of lacrosse. I've been on that team. I've played with like some of the best kids in the country. So if I can kind of bring any of that to the table for the 2026 Hoyas, I definitely want to.
All right, ready for some quick hitting questions?
Love
it's it. Like first thing that pops in your head. All right, what's your all-time favorite sports team?
Alabama football.
Okay. Favorite thing about being from Birmingham?
Ribs. Saul's barbecue ribs are incredible.
We're talking. Hey, so when your family comes into town for a game, where does the more family go to eat afterwards? Where's the best food in Georgetown?
That's a good question. Generally, we've gone to the Tombs at Georgetown, but me and my dad a couple weeks ago. I can't remember the last time I played lacrosse, but when he was here, we went to Martin's Tavern on Wisconsin Avenue. It was very good, but I'm still looking for, there's so much food there that I haven't tried. So I gotta mix it up.
What's the most memorable moment or thing that you saw when you were in South Korea?
Outside of lacrosse, I think the beaches there were phenomenal. It was the coolest. They were so beautiful. And the waves were like huge. It was awesome. And I went, me, Timothy Shanahan, and Jack Schultz went tubing on the beach. And that was probably the most fun I've had in a while.
That's incredible. What's the best Georgetown lacrosse tradition?
These are good questions. After a win, we all get around, you sing Dixieland Delight.
Okay.
But like little flavors there. That's phenomenal.
All right. Who's the best chef or cook on the Georgetown lacrosse team?
Either JoJo Dean or James Carroll. Actually, no, JoJo Dean for sure.
What's his specialty? Does he have one?
So he literally made a whole Thanksgiving meal, like a Friendsgiving meal for Thanksgiving. It was incredible. It was so good. And he'll make this like chicken buffalo dip, and you just have chips. Like, it's phenomenal. He has a whole, I don't know if the Instagram channel is still active, but he made an Instagram like account where he fed this kid, Henry Caponiti. I'm not sure if you're familiar. He went to Brunswick. He's a big boy. He's the greatest guy ever. And he just loves to eat. And he made a whole account where he just, it's called Cooking for Capo. It was one of my favorite things. I don't know if he still does it, but one of my favorite things.
So your coach, Kevin Warren, we've had him on before, and he clued us into an incredible restaurant on Long Island. What is your favorite as a team? Like, where's your favorite place to eat when you're on the road? Any road trip?
Vinny's. Vincent's Clam Bar is incredible. I never ate Italian food until I came here. Like, I don't know what it was. I thought, like, this is honestly my parents' fault, because I thought Italian was like Olive Garden. Like, you know how bad, you know how terrible that is? You know how much I have? Yeah, that's how I got to. And then I came here and we went, like, my freshman year, we're about to play Notre Dame on Long Island at Hofstra. And Coach Warren's like, we have to eat at Vincent's. And it's the heaviest meal. It was so good. Didn't really pan out for us, but like, it was the greatest meal I've had ever.
Great. All right. Last question. If we were to, one of us were walk into the Hoyas locker room, what music is playing and who's running the aux?
Luke Schlenk is sadly running the aux, and he's playing the worst house mix you'll ever listen to. Like, you don't even know where you found it. It's some like random Spotify mix, but that's what's been playing recently. So
you got to get on there and fix that.
Yeah.
All right, Andy, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you and your Hoyas teammates throughout the entire 2026 season. And let's hope you get back out on the field as soon as possible.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
And welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, presented by Simplicity Group. Thanks again, Anderson, for joining us. Appreciate it. And now let's get back to our game previews.
Dix, there's one game on Sunday that really stands out. Colgate, who's just outside the top 20. They're like the first team receiving votes. We'll travel to Charlottesville, take on the number 14th ranked Virginia Cavaliers. This game is still scheduled for noon on Sunday. You can catch it on ACC Extra. And UVA is a 4.5 goal favorite in this game. It's our first time seeing Virginia this year, and the Hoos have a lot to prove.
They do. The bad weather wasn't exclusive to the upper, you know, upper mid-Atlantic. The Carolinas got crushed with snow over the weekend, the last couple weeks. Charlotte got as much as over a foot, I believe. So Colgate loses their season opener to Penn State. Colgate's fun to watch. I watched a little bit of that game on Big Ten Network Plus. That was fun. They actually fell behind 3-0. Then they went on a 5-goal run, 5-3. Penn State called timeout and then got their act together. But Colgate plays an exciting brand of lacrosse. They play fast. They're going to 10-man ride. And we'll see how Virginia handles it because, you know, Colgate,
they've got a game under their belt.
So they've been in that game setting, that speed that you need to play with.
Whereas
Virginia just have scrimmages under their belts, which are different animals, although they are competition. Interesting to see for Virginia who's going to start in goal. And then offensively, what are they going to look like? Brendan Millen was injured in a couple of the scrimmages or didn't play, the number one recruit in the country in the class of 25. And all reports and all the film that I've seen in limited has McCabe Millen now coming out of the box, playing midfield and doing a really nice job of.
You know, so Truett Sunderland is back, a known commodity. But the last couple of years for Virginia, the questions, you know, who's going to step up at midfield? Who's going to play midfield? And I think that remains a question. They get some guys back from injury as well. In particular, I'm thinking of Dunkel, who can play attack or midfield. So it'll be a good opening test for a Virginia team that had an incredibly disappointing 2025. And Colgate, who had a watershed year, winning the Patriot League tournament, going to the NCAA tournament. You know, obviously they lose a couple of guys through the portal and through graduation and things. But and again, I know I mentioned this on our lost episode, but do yourself a favor and go to Colgate social media and Matt Kerwick's sons identify the teams with the Fox NFL music behind them, and you know, the other school's logo pops up and they're like, oh, they're the V Pirates or something. You know, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, go check that out. Again, that game is a Sunday at noon on ACC Network Extra, is where fans can see that. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. If you're new to the show, welcome. But also, this is how we do this. It's usually our closing segment each episode. It's for fun. Dixie is a professional broadcaster. He's quick on his feet. He doesn't know what we're going to talk about. I throw a topic out there and then we kind of mix it up, hash it out. Sometimes it's a little more organized and like he gives his top three and I react to that or vice versa. But here's today's topic, Dix, for the give and go. All right. Everyone thinks like, you know, you go to the grocery store before a big storm and there's like no bread, no milk, no eggs. It's like everyone's making French toast or something like that. And it's always always fascinating to see like the cheese aisle just completely cleared out at the Food Line or the Harris Teeter or the Giant store or whatever. But what are you actually buying? What does Mark Dixon buy when you go to the grocery store before a storm or some apocalyptic event? You know, what are your go-to items that you need at your house to ride out a storm?
You know, that's a great question because before the storm that we had, I wanted to run up to the local grocery store and pick a few things up. And I said to my wife, who does our grocery shopping, the quantity of it, what else do we need? And she gave me, you know, a list of things.
And I was pleasantly surprised that there was bread, there was milk, all those essentials. What I wanted to get, first thing I got was soup. I picked up soup. And I've actually switched to Progresso brand. I grew up on Campbell's, so I love Campbell's tomato soup, but the amount of sodium in that thing you ever see the movie, I think it's called Mercy, and it's the biopic of Brian Wilson, when he's younger, played by Paul Dano. When he's older, he's played by John Cusack. It's about Brian Wilson, the now deceased former lead singer, founding member of the Beach Boys. But Paul Giamatti plays the guy, the guru or the doctor that was taking care of him that actually was sabotaging his life. And his girlfriend brings him matzo soup. And he's like, this is a sodium bomb. Like, that's Campbell's soup, unfortunately. Progresso soup. You mentioned the cheese. My wife asked me to get, like, cheese and crackers. So I picked up the cheese, got the crackers, but then also they had this nice bruschetta. So I grabbed some of that. And then I like cereal. most cereal, if not all, well, I would say most cereal has no redeeming nutritional value. But I found a cereal that I used the Yucca app, Y-U-K-A, and scan, and it's a 0 to 100 scale, and it's bad, poor, fair, good, excellent. And I found a cereal that rates very well on the Yucca app and the good. So I got some cereal. But the main thing I was going to get, what?
What brand would you get? What kind of cereal did you try to get?
So okay, I don't want to give away, I mean, for like, you know, free advertising, but there's stuff called Magic Spoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like $10 a box. But it was on sale for like $6.99. So I'm like, okay, I'll get it. Even though it's still way too much for cereal. But the biggest thing I was going to get was plain Greek yogurt and Biscoff. Do you know why?
No. What are you making?
You haven't seen the Japanese cheesecake trend on Instagram?
No, I don't. Not the kind of content that I'm looking for. Tell me.
Well, it showed up on this fat guy's algorithm. So you take whatever brand yogurt you want to have, because you get substantial amounts of protein in it. You take Biscoff cookies, right? You know what Biscoff cookies are? The little, tastes like cinnamon a little bit. They serve them on airplanes. You take those and you put them in the yogurt. Okay. Put the top back on the yogurt, and you can add other things in there. My wife I'll get to that in a second. You take that and then you put it in the fridge and you leave it in there for like 4 or 6 hours. And the Biscoff just kind of blends in with the yogurt. So when you scoop it out, it's almost like a tiramisu, but they call it Japanese cheesecake. Now my wife, so I made this, and then my wife, normally whenever I make anything goofy, especially if I've seen it on social media, my wife scoffs at it at a minimum. She tried it, was like, this is actually pretty good. And then of course, your cell phone's listening to you. So all of a sudden, Japanese cheesecake shows up on her algorithm, but she took the rest. You can add vanilla extract and some like espresso, honey. So Erica made one that was the plain yogurt, Biscoff, and then a little bit of honey and some espresso. And it tastes even more like tiramisu. So it was really, really good.
Wow.
So that was what I went to get in particular was the yogurt and the Biscoff.
And I learned something new every single time we do a give and go. That was great. I'm in a different boat. I'm getting wine. I'm making sure I have white wine and red wine.
Okay.
I'm getting
We had plenty of booze.
I'm getting chocolate. Like everyone's getting milk and eggs and bread. I'm like, give me a chocolate cake and some wine. So I have a little kid. I have like, you know, kids. So I like making cookies. Like when you're stuck in a house or something, we'll bake something like bake some chocolate chip cookies or something like that. Hot chocolate. Like kids drink a lot of, but then I like to do stuff like in our like crock potty, stick to your ribs, comfort foods, like I made chili. Right. And we had that for a couple of days. I make this other stuff that I've been making a lot of, get like a pork shoulder, do like a pork bolognese or a pork ragu. You serve it over like wide noodles or something, like, you know, crock potty kind of food, like a shepherd's pie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'll buy stuff like that that you can just kind of sit around and eat. But yeah, a little bit different than you're buying yogurt and cheese. But I like this idea. I'm going to check out this Japanese cheesecake that you're talking about.
I'll send you. Right, so, but here's the thing though, you cook, I don't. I'm fortunate enough that my wife does the cooking. So, you know, chili, what else? What'd she make during the snowstorm that was good? Like a pasta and meatballs was great.
There you go.
I mean, I get taken care of, you know, especially when the kids aren't home. Cause it's just me and Erica. So, you know,
That's good stuff.
I don't do the cooking, so I'm not getting what you're getting.
Yeah, making, you know, I love cooking.
Focaccia, so, things like cheesecake.
That's so good. Oh, God, that's such a good story. All right. Hey, that seems like a good place to stop. Reminder, the DeFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm and specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe, leave a review, but better yet, tell a friend about it and share it. It's free. And it really helps us share the love and pass it on to a friend. We always love hearing from you. Feel free to email us again at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.